Welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. I am your host, Nick Wagner Sr., and every week I interview guests that share career stories, ideas, and experiences to empower and inspire people to reach their full potential. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. Thanks for listening. So welcome to the show, Vijay Jayachandran. I really appreciate you making time to join me on the Full Potential Podcast.
Thanks, Nick. It's my pleasure. I'm excited. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to just share a little bit about what I've been up to and where I'm going and how potentially I can. I'm hoping this platform will help me also connect to some people out there who we can work together with. So it's exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we have a lot to talk about during our time together. And you're doing, you know, some really interesting things here in the state of Connecticut, in the startup world at this point, right? So you transitioned from corporate to the startup world, which we're going to talk about today. But I always like to go back to the beginning to kind of hear how everything started for you, because you know you've had this fantastic career and it's had a lot of twists and turns. And I always like to go back to the beginning to figure out, like, well, how did it all begin? So I really love to hear, you know, going back to when you were just a little kid, right? So like, what was it like growing up for you? How important was school? You know, did you have dreams of being an entrepreneur one day? Like, did you know what you wanted to do when you grew up? Like, share a little bit about what life was like with you for you as a young child, and then we'll get to where you are today.
Sure. So I grew up in India. An interesting growing experience, because my father was in the military. So we had it's a different life from growing up in regular in the city or whatever. We were posted to small outposts, not tiny, but small. And it was its own little world, right? So till I was in eighth grade, we were, you know, every 3 years we would move to a new place. And I had to make new friends every time, start from scratch. And it was, you know, army life was actually very, very nice for the kids, because, you have this sort of ecosystem where everything is provided and is set up. And so it was a great life. And I was lucky that I had liberal parents. So they kind of, you know, hey, go explore, do what you want kind of thing. So I really had I had very little pressure growing up in those early years. Around the ninth grade, my father decided that, if my sister was in 11th grade, if these kids are going to see the real world, it's time to show it to them now. And so we moved to Delhi, and he kind of did his sort of rotation there and moved on. But that was a huge change for us, because we were suddenly from these small army towns to, you know, the capital of the country. Entire game was different. It was a sprawling city. We had to learn to cope with that. But it was a huge growth experience. And that's when I really, you know, hit my stride and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Because before that, I really had no real plan. And I think that move that my dad made to bring us to Delhi really helped us sort of, wow, there's all the stuff out there. And I didn't even know about some of the things that I ended up doing finally. So that was huge growth. And then again, the overall competitive environment in a large city was so different. It kind of makes you raise your game and figure stuff out. So, I really figured out that I liked technical stuff. I liked, you know, physics was my favorite subject. So it felt like I'd end up in engineering. And but I like biology too. So I decided to explore both in India, the system's a little different from the US. You do your medical studies right after high school. You go into your 4-year medical program and start there. So I kind of studied for both, but I was leaning towards engineering. So I ended up joining the Indian Institute of Technology, which is a really solid engineering. It's one of the top schools in India. And I spent 4 years there in the mechanical engineering department. And I had a mentor at the time in our family circle who was instrumental in helping me make some of those decisions and sort of figure out where I wanted to go. So I think that was, you know, I'll call out Mohan Bhaiya. He's the guy who really sort of helped me figure things out. And then from there on, it was, okay, you know, did my studies, what do I want to do next? And I really wanted to continue studying. And I was excited about the opportunity to go to grad school in the U.S. So like a bunch of other students at the university, I applied. It's really interesting, because in those days, the internet was just getting started. So everything was through brochures, and, you know, you kind of read this book and figure out, hey, these universities look interesting. So I applied to a bunch of them, had no idea even sort of where they were in the US and what the environment was like, what the culture was like. Ended up at University of Delaware with a full scholarship. So I said, yeah, I need the scholarship. So I ended up going there. Fantastic 5 years. I did a master's where I worked in the AI DuPont hospital there. I was working on robots for people with high level spinal cord injury. Built, you know, did some work there to build some solutions for that. And then another professor at the university who was on my advisor board for my master's was doing work in noise control, which, you know, acoustics is not a discipline at Delaware, but he said, hey, I have this funding and I'd love to have you come and do a PhD. So I ended up going there and working with him. And I did a PhD in active noise control. So I became a guy who basically deals in helping make products quiet. And active noise control is when you introduce, you know, if you heard of the Bose headsets, but you do that at scale, like in an aircraft or in an environment where you're introducing noise to cancel noise. So I did some really cool work there. And that's really, I think my huge growth that I had was during those 5 years in grad school where, you know, there's the studies, but I think the time I spent with some really smart people around coffee tables and having discussions, talking about life, talking about sort of bigger things beyond what you're studying, I think some of my biggest growth happened there. So that's my initial story of growth. I would just say that, you know, I had, you know, if I had to point out from my parents' perspective, I'd say, you know, my father was an army guy, very, you know, ramrod straight, you know, principled.
I want to pause you for a second there. Was there was no expectation that you would join the army yourself and follow in his footsteps?
Yeah. So that's an interesting question because I wanted to actually, he's in the army, my uncle's in the Navy. So I was actually very interested in pursuing that line. And I think he was one of these really principled people who, you know, led his life, you know, caring for his people. And he said, look, you have to look at what your strengths are and make sure that you're going in a place where you're going to be really happy and growing, right? And the army requires a certain mindset, right? It's very disciplined, it's very top down. There's a certain way you have to behave. And if you feel like you enjoy that, there are lots of things that come with being in the army, but explore what really makes you excited. And I realized that as I started exploring sort of the technical world, that's where I was very excited. And there's always the opportunity to join the armed forces afterwards too, after you finish your technical degree, but things conspired differently and ended up different place. But there was no real expectation. It was more a candid advice saying, look, you can see what my life is like and what I'm doing here. If that fits, go for it. But you have lots of potential to do other things. So explore what is it that makes you the most happy.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting, especially because you had multiple family members that were in the military. So I think that's great. You mentioned a mentor helped you, you know, along your journey to kind of figure out what's next and what could be. Have you had other mentors throughout? Like, was that like your first official mentor that you can remember?
Yeah, I would think so. So my first official mentors were my parents,
right?
And my mom, who's somebody who basically taught me how to always give the benefit of doubt to other people. That's her skill. The first real mentor that I mentioned was the person who helped me in Delhi. He was a family friend, took deep interest in helping all of us, you know, and especially the kids figure out sort of where they were going, because he had, you know, he was 20 years ahead of us in the industry, seen a lot, traveled the world. So he really took me under his wing and helped me figure out some of those things early. Then the mentorship continued in grad school. My PhD advisor was a fabulous mentor. He really taught me how to think practically. You know, the whole idea was, you know, research is good, but in the end, you've got to figure out how to make it real and how do you write stuff and I think he taught me how to write technical stuff that really could withstand the test of time and convey the message. And he said, that's what I'm going to teach you how to do. So when we wrote all those papers, I learned that. And then in my career, I've had a couple of really important mentors who looked out for me. And I think one of the things that, you know, I think we talk about reaching your potential. It's not just the person, it's the environment. And I've had a couple of mentors who really created that environment for me to succeed. And I'm sure we'll talk about them as we get into some.
Yeah, no, it's so important. The other thing I wanted to ask is, you know, you decided to leave your home, right, and leave your family to go to grad school in the U.S. And that was obviously a huge decision for you. I mean, just leaving everything that you've known to go to a school that you've never visited before. I mean, it wasn't like, to your point, you weren't doing virtual tours on the internet. Was it terrifying? Was it exciting? Was it both? Like, tell us about that decision.
Yeah, it was. So I think the regular movement in my childhood sort of prepared me a little bit for that. and sort of having to go to a new place and start from scratch and make new friends and figure things out. My undergraduate school was 1,000 kilometers away from, it was in a different part of the country, never been there. So that was, you know, big. So I think going to the US, I guess I just didn't think hard enough about it. It just felt like, okay, this one's a little further, right? So it'll be fine. I had friends who were coming here, we'd figure things out. It was interesting. In the beginning, it was very confusing. I didn't even know how to, there were no ATMs in India. I didn't know how to use an ATM. I sort of figuring stuff. It's almost like building a startup. You got to figure things out from scratch and figure out your life. But, you know, strong systems, kind people, they get you there. And so it didn't take very long to feel like, okay, now I'm in the groove and I can do stuff. So I don't think I was terrified. And I think that's the attitude that I carried forward even after grad school into my career. I kind of see myself as, no, I wasn't in an entrepreneurial setting in the corporate world, but I see myself as a little bit of a corporate entrepreneur because as we talk about what I did in the later years, I regularly moved to find the next thing that would keep me growing and keep me excited. And there was a sense of trepidation going into it, but then had to figure out how to calm my nerves and say, hey, there's preparation, there's a support system, and you got to back yourself, let's go. So I think those early experiences helped me sort of be prepared for some of that.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. I wanted to ask that because it's not a, you know, it's a big move, right? Especially at a young age, right? Finishing school. So let's talk about your first job. So you ended up as a research scientist at United Technologies Research Center. And I mean, how many degrees did you actually end up with when you were all done? Was it three or four?
Yeah, so I have a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, another master's, and MBA. So I have 5 degrees. And to be fair, the last two, UTC had an extremely generous education program, and I took full advantage of that. And that was very useful because that helped me sort of round out the final pieces of what I needed to learn, at least in an educational setting. And after my last degree, which the MBA, I did it when we already had one child and we had our second. My wife told me, that's the end of your degrees. You're done going to school, because it was a huge draw on me and it was tough. But yeah, I think education has always been a part of my life, and I really sort of gained from all of those degrees. Yeah,
and you probably, I'm sure that those degrees is what helped you land the job as a research scientist because of this the experience you had.
Yeah, so my first job after my PhD was very interesting because I got the opportunity through a friend. So a friend of mine, my lab mate at my PhD, was doing his PhD also in acoustics. He had done his master's in acoustics, so he was connected to the acoustics world. And he said, hey, this thing just came through my feed. He was in some newsletter. And I kind of said, oh, that sounds great, UTRC. I would love to go and talk to them. And I wrote to the person, and the guy said, I've just had this posting out for an hour, and you already contacted me. So it was a great journey from there. I went to UTRC. So again, I had a very interesting experience because I was hired to do a project. I had a $1 million project for which I was hired to be the principal investigator to do active noise control from one of the business units at UTC. But I was hired, my job offer came in October, and I was going to join in December. And by the time I showed up in December, because of budget issues, that project had been canned. So there was no project for me when I actually showed up. And I said, so what am I supposed to do? So they said, well, there's 2 weeks left before Christmas break. And then, you know, next year will start. And of course, there's budgets for other projects. So start exploring. So I started exploring and chatting with people. And I found another really fun person who said, hey, I have this project. I'd love to have you on my project. And I said, great, let's go. And so that had nothing to do with the first one. The first one was to do with air conditioning ducts and stuff like that. The second one was to do with helicopters. And he said, let's go, let's do this work to reduce noise in helicopters with Sikorsky. And I said, wow, that sounds exciting. So the next 4 years that I was at UTRC, my primary work was on noise control in helicopters, which I had completely not imagined before going in. I learned a lot of cool stuff around blade passage frequencies. I built this big, we actually had a demo where we were doing active noise control demos for Sikorsky, and we built this seat with the speakers that were taller than me to make the sound that the blade does, and had the president of Sikorsky sitting on the chair telling us, yeah, this one's good. No, this, when I reduce this tone, it's not so good, not a big difference. So had a lot of fun doing that, but I also got an opportunity to work on jet noise, you know, noise in combustors and aircraft engines, fuel cells. UTC had a fuel cell business then, so I got to work on that. So 4 years of really very interesting projects, which I got to explore a lot of different things while I was there.
And you know, I just give my audience some background. Because we Vijay, I think I mentioned you, we have a lot of early career individuals that listen to this. And my hope is they get to hear from you and your great experiences and maybe realize what could be for their careers. But United Technologies, now Raytheon Technologies, it was renamed because of a merger of two companies. But United Technologies, to your point, right? Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, they had a fuel cell division, Otis Elevators, Carrier, mm-hmm. and then they ended up spinning off Otis and Carrier. So just give people some context. Like, there was a wide array of different things you could work on because they had so many different business units, because people are probably wondering, how on earth did you get to work on so many different things? So, and I want to definitely get to your current role with your startup, but you were at UTC for over 20 years. You went from, you know, the research center, you did other roles, you did roles internationally, you came back to the US, and you ended up as a VP of product development. So I think when people look at your career, one thing that the early career professionals always ask is how did you find your next role, right? So how did you keep finding the next thing? Was it you seeking it out and interviewing and applying? Was it someone tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, come do this? Like, can you share a little bit about that? Because you had a variety of different roles and people always ask that question.
No, absolutely. So just to give a quick, and I'm going to run through this very quickly. When I moved to Otis, which is a business unit that was a business unit at UTC then, there was a role there to become sort of the acoustics person for the entire company and help sort of build that capability in the company. And I loved that because I wanted to go touch products. So when I moved there, my first role was basically traveling the world, building models, helping people make their products quieter, and, you know, solving problems. And over time, I built an advanced simulation team there. That was a lot of fun to do. And I think I started asking the question, you know, this is great. I was doing well. I was, you know, compensated well. I was growing. But I said, what else, you know, how can I continue to grow? And I had a mentor there who said, he set me right and he said, well, that's an interesting question. But if you turn it around and ask the question, how can I increase my contribution? How can I contribute more? Then the growth comes automatically. And I said, well, that's a different way of thinking of it. So I said, what can I do to contribute more and where can I go, right? And the natural thing was, well, you're in a role where you're supporting the business because you're doing these simulations, but you're not building the product. So you should get into product development. So, you know, they found me an opportunity to go and start, you know, leading a global product development team. So I did that for a couple of years. For a very mechanical team, I was working with the team that built, you know, suspension systems, coated steel belts for elevators. And then the next opportunity came from left field because my senior leaders knew that I wanted to continue to expand breadth besides depth. And so I wanted to have a rounded view of the business. And I'd been talking to them about that. And there was a software group that the leader had left. And they said, we want you to go run that group. And I said, wow, I know nothing about what they do. They said, you'll figure it out. And so they put their confidence in me and gave me a stretch assignment. And believe me, I tell the story, the first week when I was there, there was a meeting with the field organization because I had responsibility for product development, field support, operations, everything, sort of the product side. And there's this call where for 90 minutes, people are telling issues that they're seeing in the field, right? This is a quality call. And I came home and told my wife, for 90 minutes, I didn't understand a word of what was said in that meeting. And I'm kind of like, where am I? So she's a software engineer. She said, okay, you can figure it out. So I got some books, I started reading. I went and talked to the engineers directly and said, hey, teach me. You know, I can set the strategy, but I need to understand some of the detail. I don't need to start coding. And so that taught me a way to sort of really start building breadth. And at that point, the company was sending a lot of people abroad as expats because the market, you know, the construction market was exploding in China, India, et cetera. And I started having a conversation saying, look, my kids are young. My wife's on board. If you want to send me for a few years with the family, we love international travel anyway. We would love to go explore as well as I'd love to go and see where the real business is right now. And so the VP of operations basically said, well, you know, I thought I'd go to China, but he said, would you be willing to go to Bangalore, India? And I said, oh, I never thought of that. That's where I grew up in India. But it was those were some of my most transformative years. 3 years I went there. I went there to run the engineering department, to really grow that team into a self-sustaining, strong organization, and also to bring market-beating products there for the market that was exploding. So really, it was a team that had been around for a long time, but now we had to take them to the next level. And I got a chance to look at the entire operations. So I was embedded in the factory. For a year, I even ran the factory operations. So I got full view of the operations, the supply chain, the strategy, stuff like that. I had to work with the entire leadership team to figure out how to transform the business from a product perspective and bring, you know, additional market share and improve the financials. 3 years of, you know, I saw my family very little. I used to be sometimes the last person to turn off the light in the building, but huge growth. And I really got to see the business from end to end and learn what it takes to build. Because the other thing I didn't have when I went there was a knowledge of the emerging market. All my thinking was rooted in how I did things in the US. So I got to learn that. And after those 3 years, when I came back, the next thing I did, Otis was going through some changes. And the marketing organization, you know, the person who ran that organization said, hey, I know you're very interested in the business and seeing some of the sort of stuff on the sales and marketing side. Would you like to come and join my team and building a new team? So for a year. So again, this one came from the knowledge that I was exploring. And I loved it. I spent a year as the global marketing director for high-rise systems, all the tall buildings, you know, Burj Khalifa, stuff like that, you know, figuring out the product strategy, the business strategy, how to gain share in that market. Within 4 months, I had to put together marketing collateral and stuff with the comms team for a big expo in China. So I had to learn all that from scratch. I didn't know how to put together a value proposition. So I learned all that. So I got to really understand that side of the business. I've traveled the world, met consultants, architects, salespeople. What are the challenges? How hard it is to sell? And as an engineer, you kind of assume that I make a good product, you can sell it. And then finally, when I came back and talked to some senior leaders, I said, I really want to get back into building something. I love this marketing stuff, and I really learned a lot, but I want to build. And that's when I was given the opportunity to lead a very substantial part of the engineering organization, basically the global team that built out the critical parts of the elevator and the next generation technologies. And, you know, I led a global team of people who were building the next generation IoT 24/7 connected solution for the elevator, along with other really interesting technologies. So that's when I really got to operate at scale to see, okay, now you own an organization of 600 engineers. I was participating in all the strategy conversations at the senior leadership level and really understand how you can, you know, take from, you know, you have the details, but how do you think in that sense? And you have to change your mindset completely in that role. You can't be in the weeds. You really have to build a team below you and work with them. So that was my last assignment at Otis before I left. And it was, you know, 20 years at UTC, traveled the world, worked with some incredibly smart people, worked on some great projects. And the possibilities of getting breadth are there, but every one of those moves I made started out with a sense of trepidation, a lot of learning, and I had to figure out how to make it through that. And once you're in and you kind of go in with that attitude, it sort of falls together. And I had the support system. I had leaders who were willing to take the chance on me, which is sort of a critical piece of all that.
See, I appreciate you being so honest, because I think a lot of people look at individuals like yourself that they keep getting these new opportunities and think like, well, it's all just easy, right? Like, it was easy for you. Like, this probably wasn't hard at all, right? But you were being very honest that it took an immense amount of learning. There was a huge learning curve with a lot of these roles just because you had never done it before. So I appreciate you being so honest. So I want to talk about this, because you were leading like huge teams, right? And you had this 20-year career in the corporate world, and you have gone from that to, and I'm just looking at your LinkedIn, so it was 2020, you founded your company, ACW Analytics, which is, it couldn't be more different as far as like the size, right? The size and scale compared to where you were before. And I will say this though, I think all the different experiences you've had at UTC have definitely probably helped you when leading your own business, because you probably had to do so many things. But share with us, Vijay, like, what is ACW Analytics, and why make the pivot to being an entrepreneur? Like, how, like, because I feel like this is your second part of your big part of your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I personally believe that our careers, you know, all of us are like rockets, right? So I don't know if you know about single stage and multi-stage rockets, right? So a single stage rocket gets you out in one shot, but multi-stage rockets, you know, the first one gets you to a certain height, drops off, then the next one. And I think some of us are like multi-stage rockets. The first rocket, you know, you start running, go really fast, it gets you so far, but then you kind of run out of fuel a little bit and you say, hey, what's next to really keep me excited to go? And you need to refuel. And that's sort of what I feel I'm doing right now. So, you know, when I left UTC, I didn't really know, I felt like I needed to sort of take a step back and really reassess and figure out what would be the next thing that would keep me really excited and going. And I took a break. I didn't interview, I didn't like have another job lined up. I basically said, I have no bandwidth. I was very busy. I had no bandwidth to think. I said, I need to just get out and think. And so, you know, what I did was I basically took what I like to call an extended sabbatical. And it was a time to reinvest in myself. And that was the first time after I left grad school that I had this opportunity to just, no pressure from the workplace, reinvest, right? And, you know, I read a lot. I had a lot of books waiting for me. I read a lot. I started writing my thoughts. I had a lot of thoughts that I accumulated over 20 years around how to lead, how to run organizations. I was very interested in the topic of disruption in the few years before I left UTC, because I saw that, you know, a lot of these upstarts who are coming with technology can sort of really disrupt large companies. And how do you sort of innovate in the new world, right? So that's what I was thinking about. And I started writing down those thoughts, and it ended up becoming a book, right? So as I went along, I realized I had enough to write a book, and I ended up writing a book called Empowering Leadership, and I'm sure we can get into that in a bit. But that was my way of clarifying to myself also, you know, how do you lead in this world where things are changing so fast? And as I was doing that, I started also thinking, what is the environment I want, and what's my new operating system? And I realized as I reflected that I wanted to go into something smaller. I didn't mean to go to a early stage startup like ACW. I basically thought I'd end up in a company that's had a Series A, Series B funding, and they're trying to scale, and somebody with my experience can come in. And I wanted to be in a mission-focused environment. And I also wanted a second piece was to give back. I really felt like, okay, I have experience. How can I start giving back? And I came across Mustafa Anlouis, who runs the, I was introduced to him by a colleague who runs the University of Connecticut Incubator. And basically the opportunity to, hey, you know, we've got startups here, tech startups, very technically strong, but don't know how to go to market. Do you want to join as an entrepreneur in residence and start advising some startups here? And I said,
pause for 1 second and explain real quick, what does that mean, the entrepreneur in residence? Because a lot of people that don't know what, like, probably have never heard of that term before. So share a little about that before you jump to your company.
Yeah, so EIRs are defined a little bit differently depending on where you are in incubator and accelerator. But at UConn, basically an entrepreneur in residence is somebody who has a lot of business experience, either they're serial entrepreneurs or they have experience from other sort of my role, corporate role, et cetera. And we help the startup founders figure out how to bring their product to market. So we help them with strategy, we help them with fundraising, we help them with putting together a good message, anything that they need, because what we find in university environments is the technical knowledge is very, very solid. They have patents, they're deep in the weeds in the technology, but that's not a product. To monetize and to build a product, you have to talk to customers, you have to figure out how you're gonna actually, is somebody interested in paying for this, right? And so EIRs really step in and help them make that leap across and bridge that gap and help them become successful entrepreneurs with products in the market. So that's what we do. I started advising a couple of really neat startups, one a water purification startup, another one ACW Analytics. And, you know, for a few months I worked with this team. So let me tell you a little bit about ACW Analytics. So I did not start the company. It was started by a professor and a couple of grad students out of the environmental engineering department. Who've been doing more than a decade's worth of work in predicting the impacts of severe, you know, storms, thunderstorms, hurricanes, tornadoes on the electrical grid. So they've been working with local electrical companies to help them prepare for those. And they came up with some new ideas that they wanted to monetize and said, let's start a company. And when I met them, they had an idea, they had filed for a patent, but, you know, okay, what's next? So I started advising them last year over the summer, you know, the CTO, Peter, who was a CEO at the time, he's a grad student finishing his PhD, built a proof of concept of our technology. And when I saw that, I realized that this was pretty transformative what they had. It was obviously applicable to electrical utilities, but the ability to actually figure out what's going on and a big storm is happening, because usually it takes days to figure it out. And our technology, we use remote sensing data and AI to figure out within minutes as the storm hits you, things are breaking there, those are the disruptions happening. It's huge for decision makers. And we then use the same techniques to project outwards. We have a model, so when we build a model, we can use climatological projections to also tell you what's coming and help you prepare. And that base capability is so wide that you can apply it to all sorts of critical infrastructure, right? For planning ag, for mass transit systems, for you know, telecommunications. And you can also use it for all sorts of planning and insurance and underwriting and, you know, people are really worried about climate change and what's coming. And most techniques today look backwards. They use, you know, catastrophic models, mm-hmm. which are based on statistical aggregation of the past. And just like in disruptive times, past is not an indicator of the future, with this also, if you have a model, you can actually start looking at what's going to happen in the future. So we have a niche capability that we're trying to bring to market now. So when I saw the POC was solid, we had really good results. And I was at the stage where I was trying to figure out, okay, you know, I had some things going on my family side too, because when I left UTC, we decided, okay, this is a chance to really look at our future. And my wife, who's also a working professional, was also exploring. So we were waiting for things to settle down. She found a fabulous job in Hartford. She's head of product. She's building a product team from scratch and said, okay, now we're here. We don't have to relocate because we know we are here for the long haul. And I decided to basically, I talked to the team and said, hey, I'd like to come in as your commercial co-founder, because that's what you're looking for. Come in as your CEO and help you build this company. So that's when we really started the journey of exploring wider. And that's the journey we're on. We're very early stage. As you said, I went from my past role down to, we are two employees in the company right now, my CTO and myself. We are extremely excited about the future, doing a lot of market discovery now, and we plan to really, in the third and fourth quarter of this year, start getting our stride. So very different environment. And I'm excited because, you know, it's so different from what I did in the past, but it's a chance to really get back. I feel the same way I felt when I had just finished college. I'm full of energy. I'm excited. I can, you know, work with the team to craft out strategy. We can figure out where this goes. It's a high risk journey. There's no guarantees, but I've done the mental calmness and math to say, okay, it's fine. Let's go, because, you know, we can do something very meaningful with this technology. Let's give it a shot.
You say it's different from what you did at UTC, but a lot of what you did at UTC is absolutely going to translate to this, right? I mean, the strategy
there,
the product work you did there, the marketing work, running technical teams. I mean, yes, it's only two of you right now, but just hearing you talk, right? I can just picture like all of the experience you had, you know, helping the two of you along with this journey, right? And for anyone listening, I mean, no one likes to lose their power, right? As an example, when power goes out, it's like the world ends now, right? Because it's like everything we do, like we're doing right now, requires power on the internet. So having a technology to help get power grids back online as quickly as possible is, I'm sure, positive news for everyone, right? I mean, it's kind of where I would go with that. So it's just so interesting. And I appreciate you also talking about the Entrepreneur Residence and what that is. And, you know, I feel like I have all these guests, Vijay, that I feel like I have to do follow-ups with to kind of hear like, okay, where are you now, right? Because, you know, where you are, where we're talking today, it's a very different story a year from now on, as far as what's transpired. I do want to pause for 1 second, though, because I want to go back to the book, because I want to make sure that we talk about this, because I just released a book in April. It's a huge undertaking, as you know, right? So yours is called Empowering Leadership. And I just want, if you could just, you know, a lot of early career individuals listen to this and they might really find it interesting. So share a little bit about the book.
Sure. And I think this book really plays well with early career individuals, especially people who are starting to manage teams also. So the book's premise is that, you know, the way we operate in the 21st century needs to be different. Leaders need to behave differently from how it used to be in the 20th century. So in the past, you know, if you were experienced, you had 30 years under your belt, you could just make decisions because the world was changing slowly. So if you've seen it before, boom, you go, right? But in today's environment, disruption is rampant. Change is happening so fast. I mean, just think about it yourself. You know, smartphones not been around for more than a little over a decade. Everything we do today is very different from 10 years ago. And if you don't adapt and change with the times and you just do the things that you did 20 years ago, you won't be able to succeed. And you have these big black swan disruptions also happening. COVID was a huge disruption, right? So Does anybody have the 1918 flu experience right now to deal with it? Probably not. And there are more interesting disruptions coming from climate, et cetera, right? So change is the only constant, and the past is, your experience is great, but you have to augment. So today's leaders have to basically be willing to step out of their comfort zones. That's the premise of the book, right? You have to challenge your own personal assumptions and adjust your worldview when you face new information, right? But that's not enough, right? So personally, being able to do that is good. Group leadership, you can set the vision. Disruption and change is generally unsettling and scary for most people. And so leading an organization, you have to bring everybody along with you. And they have to come with you willingly towards somewhat uncertain horizons, right? So how do you do that, right? So that's the framework I provide in this book. The first piece is really around self-assessment and really coming, you know, I talk about what leaders need to do on the personal side is to really be willing to listen, willing to change, willing to pivot, when the information presents itself. So no kabuki theater, no pre, you know, people nodding when the leader says, no, tell me the truth. That's what I need. And you have to create an environment where that truth gets bubbled up, right? And then you have to make hard decisions when they happen. And then the second piece of the book is a four-step framework, which says, okay, once you've sort of figured out how you can operate that way, you've got to institutionalize it. And so how do you operate through change? It's a four-step framework. I'll quickly tell you, the first step is to set a clear direction and North Star. Even though the long-term future may not be clear, you have to tell them where you're going now so they can all figure stuff out themselves. The second is to decentralize and empower. So you say, okay, now you understand the mission. Don't come ask me every time because you know what to do. And go get it done so people can interpret the mission and run. So how do you truly empower? That's scary for a lot of leaders to cut the cord and not be constantly, you know, if you micromanage, it's not going to work. But if you want to move fast, you can't. You'll be the bottleneck. So how do you do that? The third step is creating an environment where you're input, getting all the inputs that you need, and you're creating an environment where people are speaking up and telling you and giving you the information you need to succeed so that you can make those decisions. And then the last piece I call building resilience. And this is really about you have to help your organization visualize a positive future. Times are tough, right? But they're not going to remain tough. How do you help them? How do you believe in them? How do you engage with them? And how do you set a culture? Because one of the things that you hear a lot about today outside is about culture, organizational culture, culture statements, culture missions. I don't think culture necessarily comes from stuff you write on a wall. Mm-hmm. The culture comes from the person at the top. Everybody looks up and sees, like, what's their style? What do they want to really do? How are they behaving? And if you then set that clarity and you set that way of doing things, and then you get the next layer to do it and the next layer to do it, because they all understand that's how you want to operate and that's what will be incentivized and rewarded in this organization, culture organically happens. And it takes many years to create. So absolutely, that's the last piece that I talk about in the book. And it really lays out this way of doing. Now, the one last thing I'll mention about this book is, if you end up reading, and I hope people try to, you know, get through that book, there is a very different style that I adopt. And what I do is change is very hard, even at the personal level, to make some of these changes happen culturally and for yourself. When you say empower, it might be a struggle for you to empower. And so after every section, I actually ask for a pause. I ask a few probing questions and I ask the reader to put the book down and spend some time just working that piece. If you think that you completely get it, that piece is a non-issue for you, keep moving. But the idea is, you have to run experiments in your life and try things and take risks and take chances and, you know, be willing to try out these new techniques. And if you do it long enough, your brain rewires. So a lot of us have instincts and intuitions which are wired from all our past experiences. We are scared of certain things because something's really went bad. Right. To rewire that, it takes many, many attempts again. And so that's the process that you have to go through to change your operating style. And that's what the book also talks about.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, and again, like, to be an entrepreneur in residence at an accelerator or an incubator, having someone like yourself with just wealth of knowledge from the corporate world and a published author, I think it's fantastic. So the startups and students at UConn should feel lucky to have you there guiding them. So I love that. So we've talked about a lot, Vijay, and we could probably, I always joke, I'm not Joe Rogan, so I don't go for 2 hours of my podcast. But you know, I always close with the same question, and I think I know where we're gonna go with this, but it's, what is the one thing that you would share with my audience that's helped you reach your full potential? So what's that one thing that's helped you be so successful throughout your journey, right? Whether it be school, whether it be the corporate world, and now the startup world. What's that one piece of advice you'd give my listeners?
So I'll give you a little bit of a long-winded answer. So I think I just don't know how you measure somebody's potential, right? I mean, it's just something you don't know, and whether anybody's reaching their full potential, I think it's for the people who come after to find that out. I think what you can measure and what I've focused on is growth. You can measure whether you are growing, whether you are excited, you're engaged, you're inspired, and every day you go in, you're looking forward to doing the next thing and you're creating something new and building something new. And I think once you sort of figure out a way to, I had a technique at work where every year I would write down the things that I thought could be better, and the next year I put them in my goals, and then I track them to closure, right? And yeah, so you can get pretty methodical about evaluating yourself and seeing where you want to go. And even with the career, you ask this question, did your opportunities come from left field? I was very formal with having 6-month conversations with my supervisors saying, I don't want to put you under pressure, but I just want to say, this is what's happening and where are the opportunities? So they know what you're looking for and they're starting to create opportunities for you. So I think growth, now how do you create an environment for growth? And there are two aspects that I think help. One is you personally need to be invested in that mindset that I'm going to grow and I'm going to figure out a way to manage my emotions and whatever when things get rocky. But you need to create an environment for growth, and you want to be in environments where the system is supporting you, your mentors are supporting. Because I was naive when I started my career, you know, I can conquer the world, but you can't, you know, you just can't. You can do a whole lot yourself, but then you need help. And the way I achieved growth in my life was because other people believed in me and gave me the opportunity. And so it takes a community. I think that's where I'm going. But you have to be somewhat deliberate about establishing that community around you. And if you find that you're in an environment where your growth is getting stifled by the environment, and environments change, right? Then you say, how do I fix it? And how do I create that environment where I will give the support? So that, because I'm going to do risky stuff and I'm going to do stuff to grow, I need that. And it starts with the family. You have to have it there. And then it goes outwards through your friends and your colleagues and your mentors. And you want to create that environment, and you can absolutely achieve high potential. And then once you're gone, somebody will decide whether you achieve your full potential or not.
I love that. I love that answer. I love the focus on growth, and especially starting with your family. And you've had so many mentors that have helped you along the journey. And so I just want to say thanks again for making time. I know you're a busy individual. So I wish you the best with your startup, and you know, hopefully you can get all these different you know, power companies to adopt this technology and get the grid put back together more quickly after big storms. So I think everyone would benefit that. So thank you for joining. And again, we'll make sure we link to your LinkedIn in the show description, as well as the ACW Analytics website, so people can get in touch with you there as well. And I know you're always open to connecting with people. So thanks again for making time.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure, Nick. Really appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully it creates some new connections. I'd love to connect with more people. One of the things that I'm now very invested in is now that, you know, I'm really hoping that I can do my little bit to grow the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Connecticut, bring the jobs back and make the state thrive. We have this huge opportunity. We have built this new incubator in Stanford for AI and analytics out of UConn. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of opportunity, and I'm hoping that it all happens through connections and conversations and interactions. Absolutely. And I love these kinds of opportunities. So thank you so much for having me on, Nick, and I'm sure we'll stay connected.
Thank you, sir. Be well. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Full Potential Podcast. If you'd like to hear more interviews, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. You can also connect with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to check out our website, fullpotentialmovement.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, and be well.